But he said, all the villagers believe it. Because it's a usual thing, by bribes, presents, whatever it is. And he said it's probably due to your chief interpreter, Patrick Butler. And Garrett said that he once was out preaching the gospel somewhere, and a man came hurrying through the village, something in the village. Where are you going to? Oh, I'm going to the country. I've applied for the job of headman's or whatever, or so on. And I'm taking the money necessary. Here's so much for the government agent and so much for the chief interpreter, you see. 500 apiece, I think, for the government agent, 500 for the whatever it was. I'm taking it there. I have to mortgage my land and all the rest to take the rest. Here it is. This is money. Well, the next day, this man came hurrying back. Where are you going? Oh, he said, it's not enough. The government agent wants 1,000 and not 500. And I've got to go back and see my brother and get him to mortgage his land. And he came back with the other 500 with him. Well, Garrett said, well, all the villagers were bound to believe that. And we presume that it was the chief interpreter. Who said, of course, the government agent doesn't take this money himself, but you see, it's...
And took it himself.
And took it himself. That was believed. Poor old Wace. I mean, you don't know the Wace family, but his brother was Dean of Canterbury, and another Dean was Don of BNC in my day, an adjutant of the...
Regarding this Gansaba system and the village headman, do you think by the 1930s it was anachronistic? Later on?
Oh, by the 1930s. Perhaps it was. Mm-hmm. I very much doubt that the village is better off now under whatever blasted system they've got now. Elections and God knows what else. Well, the elections are corrupted, huh? Mm-hmm. I very much doubt if they're any better off.
What about these urban councils which you mentioned in connection with Mr. Fraser? Do you think these urban councils, as distinct from the Colombo Municipal Council, and other municipal councils, do you think they provided politicians with a good training ground?
Mind you, I ceased having to do with them in 1924. Mm-hmm. But it's difficult to say, you see. They were still all the poor, wretched little local proctors and others, you see, who instead of being on the local board, they were on the council. And they had no idea of... Well, they thought they got power, and they then proceeded to do the most ridiculous things. And they all quarrelled as to who should be the chairman. And then finally somebody got elected as chairman, you see, and then as soon as he was elected as chairman, all the other councillors proceeded to try and tear him down. Well, that's all natural, I suppose. You couldn't say that they were getting really any much experience in administration. Mm-hmm. And I was, you see, on the Ngumbo Council, but not chairman and no vote, but I was member, no voting power. I used to go there regularly and so on. And I didn't interfere. I was even more like a help. I simply observed. And the asked advice, I gave it. But of course, a wretched secretary used to come to me and say, what shall I do about so and so? I said, for God's sake, don't ask me. I said, that's the Roger Patsa, didn't you? She said, they were very ignorant, you see. Mm-hmm. I suppose it was a good beginning. And you see, they had no conception of what the civil servant did. You see, I checked the accounts myself as to when I was returning to the local board. I mean, I checked the accounts, I checked all the slaughterhouse fees and all the blessed things, as they chased them into the ledger and chased them into the cash book and chased it all into the bank. I checked all that. And when I when the elected chairman said, he never did anything, or he left all the secretary. Well, he was secretary there, was pretty good, he was lazy. But some of the secretaries, of course, put money in their pockets.
Mm-hmm.
Elsewhere, not there, but, I mean, and I remember the trouble at Martley. I've forgotten what. And I said to the, I went up to inspect, I told him, and I said to the then, whatever he was called, the chairman, Ben Ryan, Crown Proctor, I said, but did you ever check the accounts? He said, no, no. He said, of course not. He said, local government to me doesn't mean checking the accounts. They had sort of ideas, you sat in a chair and passed resolutions. I mean nothing funny. Ed Nagumbo, for example, one of the members proposed that there should be two midwives employed in Nagumbo. Two midwives. Oh. So they all sat round. So I said to them after they talked over, I said, you know, first of all, you've got no power under the ordinance you're working under to employ midwives. It's not one of the things you do. And I said, they're all under the medical department. And I said, for another thing, the medical department can't get enough midwives as it is. They don't exist. And so you're not likely to get to where you're going. Nevertheless, we will pass the resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And they passed it, and they all went blowing out their chests and thought, what fine fellows they were. But nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing happened.
Yes, I see.
But they were quite a number of them very well meaning.
Yes.
But just one point to show how difficult it was to discover what the people wanted. When we prescribed there should be public meetings held in various places to decide whether they wanted an urban district council or not. When it came to Batticalel, public meeting was held one day there, and that evening I had two telegrams. One from the chairman of the public meeting, saying that the public meeting unanimously decided that they wanted to have an urban council. And I had the other telegram from the secretary of the meeting saying the public meeting unanimously decided they did not want. Same meeting, chairman, two different things. A public meeting. So then we wrote the government agent and said, could he tell us anything about it? And he said he couldn't say, except that the meeting ended in some confusion. That's true.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm not laughing at them, I'm just striving. You see, you people who write books about these things, you start with all sorts of theoretical ideas about the this and that and the other rest of it. But when it comes down to the point, the question is, what sort of people are running these things? What are people like?
Mm-hmm.
And whatever kind of form of government you have in any country, it'll be a mess for a long time. And you remember what Churchill said, that democracy was the worst possible form of government until you looked at all the others. I mean, look at the condition of affairs in England. I mean, the local government in England. In some places, Birmingham, Liverpool, London, is most efficient. But I was on, for some years, I was on a borough council after I retired. And I resigned after a few years. As I told some of them, I said, I wouldn't have permitted this incompetence in a roadside bazaar in Ceylon. You know? I mean it.
Mm-hmm.
The chairman of the committees didn't know the first thing about what their committees were doing.
Yes, I see.
In common.
If I may turn to the political aspect, in the early years of your career in Ceylon, did these theosophists and free thinkers come to your attention much?
No, no.
Not much notice was taken of them?
Oh, I don't know whether other people did. I was not interested in that sort of thing. I did not...
What about these temperance meetings?
Which?
The temperance meetings.
Oh, I know very little about it, but the general idea was that the temperance meetings were all mixed up with the people who were wanting what was called a reform of the Constitution.
Yes.
And therefore there was a sort of general feeling that they were all seditious. But some years afterwards, in the 1920s, was it, I was at some lunch, I don't know what it was, sitting next to D.S. Senanayake.
Mm-hmm.
I must have been when I was mayor, but I don't know, the 1920s, but later.
No.
But I got talking, it was long before he was Prime Minister. And he said, you know, he said, when I began to take an interest in politics, I realized that I shouldn't get very far unless I linked it to the Buddhist religion.
Mm-hmm.
Which meant that I had to take Buddhism seriously. But he said, you know, it meant I had to give up my two greatest, two most favorite pastimes. One was hunting, and the other was beer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was making a story. And he said, I've had to do without those ever since. Well, what he meant was that temperance, things he was necessary to catch the imagination of the Buddhists and so on.
Yes.
That's right.
But it was, would you say that it was an attempt by thinking politicians to evoke mass response?
To evoke?
Mass response, political response from the people.
Yes, yes, that's it. Well, Senanayake told me so.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any idea what government's attitude to these temperance societies was? Government?
No. It was like government felt that there was some giant that was stirring in his sleep and wished to God he'd go to sleep again.
Oh, I see.
I think that's all.
Yes. I was wondering whether they felt that these were sort of political mediums held under the cloak of temperance. Political mediums.
Oh, they probably were.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, yes. Why not?
Yes, why not? And can you remember this famous reforms dispatch of 1910, I think?
I've forgotten all that.
Yeah.
It was my subject once, and I had copies of it all and received. I haven't got them, haven't read them.
Well, if I may say something about it,
yeah,
I think it was Clifford who really wrote it. He argued that, in effect, his argument implied that Ceylon was not ready for the self-governing process to begin.
Yeah, yeah.
What would you say to that?
What?
What would you say to that?
Well, I don't want to try to be funny or clever, but I would say truthfully that no country in the world is really fit for the process of local self-government to begin. I mean, it means self-government at the start means chaos and usually corruption. And it means upsetting the previous form of government, which may have been, but as ours was, honest and efficient and so forth. And all that. But the general view of the world is that the people should govern themselves and so on, even if they make a mess of it. And they've got to begin sooner or later, and you've got to get... It costs, of course, like all human enterprises, it means human sacrifice.
Interview interrupted. Continues now.
Mr. Davidson. Mm-hmm. He made the point that, well, he and the other British were out to bring some sort of good government.
Yes.
But what you think is good government may be anathema to to another people.
Quite,
you see. And in this sense, self-government is better than good government. Because, it's an argument to support this popular cliche that self-government is better than good government.
Yes, you mean he thought that the people of the country ought to have appreciated that our government was a good one.
No, he didn't say that. He said that one of the aims, I mean one of the sort of vague intentions of the British was to bring good government.
Yeah.
But their way of thinking was different from the people's way of thinking. And because of that, what they thought was good may not have been appeared as good to the people.
Yes, I see. Yes, well, the that's perfectly right. The we thought that that what we were trying to do was obviously right.
Yes, that's right. He says it's not so obviously right.
Obviously right and proper and that sort of thing, you agree? And couldn't understand why people were so silly they couldn't understand it. But nobody ever explained it to us. We might, in the course of a time, realize it. Mm-hmm. For example, take the this chain of cultivation business, which is another matter about which I know very little. But regularly, every year, the people of the villages of North Central Province, they all cut down their chainers without a permit or in excess of the permit. They always did.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were reported, and they were run in, and they were brought all the way to Rajapura. And they were run in, and then they were duly found guilty, and they were fined. And that was that. Now, I pointed this out to the government agent. I said, you know, these people don't regard that fine as a punishment for clearing that chain.
It's a payment.
No, it's a happening.
Oh, I see.
Just like a drought or the paddy fly, it's one of the ills of life. It is just
karma.
Karma, yes. Karma. And what got my goat was this, and there again, you better be very careful. At my time in Anarajapur, the magistrate was a local man. And, well, as I say, he's dead, I think he's somebody, but he was some widower. But he was always had to finish his job well before lunch. And if possible, get drunk by lunchtime. And he simply shoved through the cases anyhow he could, yelling at the people if they didn't plead guilty, and browbeating them, you see. And he had to be finished by lunchtime, and he was just a drunkard, you see. And these chain of cases were always the same. I've seen dozens of them. His for the proceedings. G, K says 1 acre, 10 rupees. The first G meant, I have explained the charge to the accused, who says I am guilty. The second G meant, I find the accused guilty. K says 1 acre, meant the corrala says the clearing was 1 acre, not the 5 acres in the plaint. Fine, 10. G, case of Malacca. Well, this was an absolute travesty of justice.
Mm-hmm.
And I pointed all this out to the government agent.
What were you then?
I was a mayor office assistant. I hadn't been out all a year, just over a year. But no. The old wheels went round and round and round and just went on. As a matter of fact, the Mudlias, the Rahmahatma, sent in what are called illicit clearing reports, you see.
Yes.
You know, to say how much was left. These were then, the current thing was that they were then sent straight away, plates were made out, one on each, and then they were sent to the court. The head clerk ordered his summons to issue, went to the fiscal, went for the fiscal round to the head.
Yeah.
And in due course, these wretched villagers had to come in walking 30, 40 miles each way to the court. And if it got under 12 o'clock, 12:30, this Adam used to, he'd simply say, case postponed.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't going to hear it in the afternoon, so it was postponed for another month, and he would go back. And in the end, a whole bunch of these illicit clearing reports came in, and I wrote on the top of each the amount of the fine. What this Adam would have given, you see, if it was what I wrote the amount of the fine on each top, just what he would have given, and I sent it back to the Mudlia, to the Rajamahatma, and I said, the amount of the fine is the compensation, I could, or whatever it's called. I've endorsed on each plate. I said, if the people care to pay that, and see themselves coming in, just collect the money and send it in, and that'll be the end of it. Well, unfortunately, the government agent was on circuit, and the Ratna Mahatma showed him this and said, "Is this your order?" He said, "No, no, no, you've got to go." He picked me up like hell. He said, "Oh, no, we've got to go through the envelope." Not only that, but the government agent, who was perfectly straightforward, he said, "You see, the Land Settlement Department use these cases as evidence. If they plead guilty, declaring a chainer, that means that they admit the Crown claim. They admit it's not private land." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Do you mean to say, sir, that you're going to regard as evidence?"
But the point is, in the North Central Province, no one was claiming it as private anyway. They were cultivating in China because they had to cultivate it.
Oh, quite, all that. But I'm only indicating that how stupid are. And Vaughan was a nice, kind person in many ways, but utterly, utterly stupid.
Don't you think that, on this question, China question in the dry zone, don't you think the government orders were far too strict?
Oh, yes, I mean, you are, but Strong will tell you all about that. I know very little about it.
Mm. What do you think of Freeman?
Hmm?
What did you think of Freeman?
Oh, he was a dear thing, yes. But the villagers, in the end, they you twisted him all around. They used to laugh at him behind his back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They'd put him up after he retired, they'd put him up to represent them to whoever it was, Jay, and then they'd turn around and laugh behind their hands.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he was...
Same with Sands, I think.
Oh, probably.
There's
a good story. I think it was Freeman. I've forgotten who the office assistant was. But I think it was Freeman's office assistant over at Jaffna. That there was some problem, I've forgotten what. And Freeman drafted a letter to government, setting out the problem, setting all that. And the last paragraph, the whole letter led up to the course of action that should be taken. But Freeman, in the last paragraph, oh, you know the story?
No, I don't.
In the last paragraph, he suggested something quite different, utterly different. So the office assistant thought, "Oh, the old man's gone dotted." So he took the letter back to Freeman and said, "Excuse me, sir, but I mean, it's quite obvious, surely, from what you've set out here, that the right course of action would be so-and-so, so-and-so, so-and-so." He said, "Isn't that the thing to suggest?" Freeman said, "Oh, no, it wouldn't do that." "But, sir, but..."
"It's contradictory," he said.
"Huh?"
"Did he say that it was contradictory?"
"No, he said it leads up to what you say. I agree, but," he said, "that's obvious." He said, "If I put that in the letter, sure as fate, government will turn it down."
Said, "Oh, I see."
He said, "It'll be tough." He said, "They'll find some reason to tear it down." He said, "If I send it in with this final paragraph, which is obviously ridiculous," he said, "these bright boys in the secretariat will say that silly old fool Freeman's done it again. He can't even see that the right thing to do is so-and-so, and they'll write back and tell me to do what I really want to do." I won't tell you who it was, but it was one of his office assistants told me that.
So he's quite a wise old bird.
Yes, quite.
I heard that in a similar story with regard to appointments in the 1930s, when a GA put the man he wanted, number two, knowing that the State Council will turn his first first recommendation down. And sure enough, they did.
Yeah, well, when I was... I was the first Commissioner of Local Government, you see. It was a new department entirely. 1939. No, well, when was it that blessed thing came in? 1930. I was Commissioner of Local Government, and I was also Secretary of that Executive Committee under old Battlewanter Dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And the government agents were asked to recommend people for nomination, you see, to urban district councils and things and the rest of it. And that creature, G.K.W. Pereira, who's one of the worst people, I mean, he always fought against the GA's nominees. And he said, "It's perfectly clear that the GA's will only nominate people that'll do as they think, will come running to them and the rest of it, so that anyone nominated by a GA should be automatically out." But there was a case. Did you ever know Battlewanter Dollar?
No.
Dear old thing. Oh, such a nice old man. As lazy as be damned.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to put things up to him, you see, for him. And he said to me once, he said, you know, Mr. Newman, he said, this is all gone wrong. He said, I find that I'm approving everything that you suggest. And he said, everybody will say that I'm in your pocket. And so on. And I said, don't you understand, sir, that in matters of administration, 99 times out of 100, there's only one thing to do. Only one thing to do. That's all. I said, it's bound to be, whoever it is. As long as they're honest, there's only one thing to do. And he said, oh, I see, that's it. I said, yes. I said, if you disagree with anything that I put up, I said, you'll find sooner or later you'll be in the ruddy soup. And of course it was so. But he didn't understand that. But he was an awful old muddler. Mm-hmm. And
incompetent?
Oh, yes, he did. Well, yes, he was incompetent. He didn't try. I went, as a matter of fact, I went to Senanaka, who was a strong man of the show at the time. I went to him once and I said, look here, I knew Senanaka anyway. And I went to him once and said, look here, I want to talk confidentially about Wantawa. I said, he won't do any work. I said, he doesn't read anything I put up to him. He simply proves everything. He doesn't, he takes no interest in anything whatsoever. And I said, I'm afraid there'll be a breakdown. I said, some of the members of his committee will probably turn and rend him. And there'll be trouble. I said, as I'm telling you, I said, is it possible for you to try and juice him to stand up to his job? I mean, I wanted him, you know,
yeah,
to stand up to his job. And he said, you know, he said, nobody can do that. He said, he's an absolute butler. He said, at one time, he was chairman of the Buddhist Philosophical Society, was it?
Yeah, it must have been something like that.
Was that? He said he was chairman of that. And he said the accounts apparently got into a most awful mess, and I was told that they were in a shocking mess. And I thought, oh dear, we can't have a scandal. So he said, I took them all over and I put an accountant on to sort them out. Because I was afraid that old Batu, with sheer muddle, had probably been spending them himself. But he said, believe it or not, he said, when they were sorted out, it turned out that exactly the opposite. The case that he spent a lot of his money on the Theosophical Society, but he didn't know it.
Oh.
He said it might quite well have been the other way round. That's a narco story.
I see.
But I did what I could to prop him up, you see. Mm-hmm.
Turning back to the earlier period, now, what sort of association was this Ceylon National Association? You know, James Pierce and the crowd.
I was too young to have much to do with that. There was a story, I don't know if it's true, that Senanaka paid for the education at Jaggers, at Jesus College, of D.B. Jatilka.
Oh.
That he sent him to England and had him educated there in order to use him politically afterwards. I don't know if that story is. I heard that, 40 years ago.
And going a sort of decade further, in the 1920s, you got this change instituted by Manning. You know, they had this legislative council in which the unofficials outnumbered the officials. Can you remember that? Just before Donovan.
Who are
the unofficial element,
yes,
outnumbered, yes, the officials.
Yes.
Was government hamstrung as a result?
Were they hampered?
Yes, hampered.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Did you find a lot of, for instance, in the field, did you find a lot of political interference?
Oh, well, Strong has told you about all that.
Well, Strong has told me about his case, but I was...
Forrester Obasekra.
Yes.
Well, I wasn't in the field, so to say, then. This was, you see, I was from 1924 to 30, you see, I was mayor, as I told...
Independent person, sir.
I said I was... a foreign and perhaps friendly power.
Okay.
I had my own troubles. I mean,
mm-hmm.
You wouldn't believe the way some of those councillors behaved.
What did they do?
Well, I mean, they get up and they curse me to blazes in the council meeting.
Did you feel it was simply a spirit of factious opposition?
Yes, that was a lot of the weather.
I mean, this is a government, they are Europeans, we must oppose them. Was that
was largely it, but I put them all in the cart by starting off and saying, I said, I announced, I've had a policy. Nobody's had a policy before.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I got a policy which is save the slums and save the children. I want to clear away some of these sums and to stop this dreadful infant mortality. And I said, those are my policies. Let me... Well, they couldn't very well object to them.
No,
they were furious.
About this political interference, what about the period earlier, when earlier period, when you were A.G. and Igambo and Colombo? Did you find any trouble then?
I don't remember anything about them at all.
I think it developed gradually, and it was more in the 1920s.
Fletcher.
Fletcher was not popular because did he listen to this?
Well, Fletcher used to thought he could be. He thought he would be more clever than the Selenese, you see. And that was the idea. Old Strong's told you about that. But the municipal councillor, there was a man, R.L. Pereira, you probably heard about him. He was a leading lawyer. And he'd get up and say the most outrageous things. That was simply because the man was essentially a swine. I mean, he did it in court. Sir Thomas Garvin mean anything to you?
No.
He was a judge. He ought to be Chief Justice. That was true. We didn't stop that. He was an awful nice fellow. He was knighted in the end. Sir Forrester. I think it's Sir Forrester Garvin he called him. But he told me, I was talking about R.L. Pereira. He said, I've got a way of dealing with R.L. Pereira. That was when Garvin was Solicitor General, Attorney General. He said, if he's opposing me in court, he said, right at the beginning of the show, he said, I say something or other which I know will get well under his guard and get him in, get under his skin. And he then goes straight up in the air and behaves in the most outrageous fashion. And he said, I sit down and say, no, my lord, sorry, I can't carry on with this. And Bernardo Pereira would get more furious. He'll find the bench ticked him off, you see, and said if he didn't pay himself, he'd be turned out. And they brought him to jail. Well, I couldn't do that. But I give you one case. I won't tell you who it was. It was one counselor, municipal counselor. When I came in, you see, they were all there, and then they were all ready. I would come in onto the bench, and everybody would stand up, and I'd bow, you see, and rest of the time. And there was one counselor who always used to give me such a friendly little smile. The sort of personal friend and smile as I sat down, and I thought, well, though he's sometimes peacefully, but I thought, well, he's a nice lot. After I ceased to be mayor, Stace, I think, took over. The very next meeting, this man got up and delivered the most outrageous attack upon me. Absolutely outrageous attack upon me. Stace said to me, told me about it, he said, had you got a down on him, had a row with him? I said, on the contrary, I said, we were rather friendly. He said, well, he was most virulent in his attack upon you, sir.
Yes, I see.
No, I mean, how could you cope with that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm. Did you know Mr. Tambimoto, E.R. Tambimoto?
Oh, yes, I met him.
Mm-hmm. What sort of a chap was he?
Oh, he was absolutely crooked.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
He was a proctor, wasn't he?
Well, he was very clever.
How did you personally get on with the leading politicians, the Senanayakas?
Oh, very well indeed. Senanayaka was always very good to me. He wanted me to be the director of agriculture at one time. He said, when I was finished at Relief Distress, he said, he came and asked me to come and see him. I think he came to see me. And he said, look here, Mr. He said, will you be my director of agriculture? What? Me? On my line of country? I don't know about it. Don't want to. Oh, he said, I was very glad we're in a mess in it. And I want somebody to come and clear it up. Oh, I looked at him. And I thought, I said, well, look here. I said, I will, provided I can have 6 months leave first, which would suit me. I said, but he said, hooray, hooray. And he did a dance. He skipped about. He said, hooray, hooray. And he was awfully nice. And so I went into Tyrol. He took me into Tyrol. Oh, I told you that.
No, I didn't.
Went into Tyrol's chief secretary, and he said, Mr. Newnham.
This is after malaria, after the malaria.
Malaria was it, yeah.
Couldn't have been Tyrol, it must have been Wedderburn.
Oh, this was Tyrol, this occasion like that. Because I went in there, and And like I said, Mr. Newnham, I'm very glad to say, has said he was willing to become Director of Agriculture for me, but he wants 6 months leave first. Well, he can't have it, says John. So I said, I looked at him and said, I beg your pardon. He said, he can't have it. He said, he must realize that leave is a matter of grace, not a matter of right, and he can't have it. So then I looked at her, he said, you understand, Mr. Tyrrell, that an officer who starts with a grievance under me is no good to me. He said, I'm not going to have a head of a department starting off with a grievance and not having got the leave which is due to him, which he thinks he ought to have, which he ought to have. He said, I wouldn't employ him. Well, I mean, that's pretty good, you know. As a matter of fact, I discovered then, quite by chance, I dined in Queen's House that night, sitting next to Stubbs, and Stubbs said to me, when are you going to start to till the soil? And I said, I don't know, sir. I said, I hear a rumour today that there's somebody coming from the West Indies to... Oh, yes, said Stubbs. He said, at the end of the year, I've arranged for a fellow to come from the West Indies to take over the job. I said, who it was? I said, well, thank you very much, sir. I said, then the answer to your question is never. I said, I'm not going to act for anybody.
I was asking about how you got on with the politicians, because this is a rather personal question, because I know that the civil service, well, many civil servants were rather appalled when Wedderburn and the governor passed you over and chose Woodman as deputy chief secretary.
Oh, what about it? Many civil servants what?
They were rather appalled that they passed you over and chose Woodman. And I know that Wedderburn or someone said that you didn't get on with the politicians when another civil servant has told me that he didn't think that was true at all.
Oh, that's rather funny. Curiously enough, I had a letter ask me about that from Australia this last week.
Who was it?
Oh, well, he was a master attendant.
Oh, I see.
He wouldn't know him. And he said, I've often wanted to ask you, and I thought to myself, well, I'll write and tell you the facts. I never beat the red carpet, as we say. I mean, I never looked out for my own hand.
Yes.
I always did the job that I did in accordance with my lights as the best I could, regardless absolutely of its effect on me personally. And if government were annoyed, I used to say, well, that shows a good I made.
No, you see, government doesn't come out of it well. It shows a rather stuffy, old shirt attitude, you see.
Yes, but what I'm going to say is this, that I never aimed at promotion at all. I mean, I did my job to the best of it, regardless of its effect on me, you see. And but just towards the end, there's a question of the vacancy. It was when Tyrrell retired, I think, and Wedderburn was going up, you see, and then there's a vacancy in Depp as deputy. Well, that was the chance. Whoever was deputy would be gone. So I thought to myself, well, I'm now going, this is the one chance of my life, and I will do something. And I went to actually went to his saw Stubbs. It was very nice and charming, and said, oh, well, I'll think over all you say, and that'll be that. Well, then I knew the matter would go to the Public Service Commission, consisting of the three people. Well, there was a man I knew who was in touch with all those people, and I went to him. I said, look here, this is the first time in my life that I've ever done anything with my own hair by myself. I said, can you, by any chance, find out how those public service people are going to work? And he did. Or he told me, he said, yes. He said, Huxham, who was my boss as in the customs, he said, Huxham's going to vote for you. Wedderburn says he's going to vote for Woodman because he wants a quiet life. And Howard, who was the legal secretary, says, well, after all, it's a deputy to Wedderburn that's being appointed. So he says he wants Woodman, so I'll follow him. Well, that's what this man said he had from Wedderburn on the ground he wanted a quiet life. I mean, that's the nearest I can tell you. Well, I mean, I say there were other reasons, it may be. I mean, I'm not saying I was competent, but you were saying there were actually the worst of other civil servants who were...
Well, they knew that you had... they were... Leach and Davidson, they were surprised. I mean, they were not... Well, they felt that since you had taken on government as chairman of municipal council,
I mean, they were not surprised in the way that government reacted, but they felt that you should have been chosen, you see.
I see, yeah. Well, was there some other point there that... yes. This is a very personal thing, but I couldn't help being amused. You've seen a little woodman who's a quite nice little fellow. Have you met him?
No, I haven't.
Well, he's not worth consulting, I'm sure, but how do? He was a quiet little fellow. He was rather a decent type. But he was all right. But he was made deputy and he was made chief secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's the only chief secretary in the history of Ceylon who was never knighted.
Mm-hmm.
He was not knighted and indeed was sacked.
But that was Leighton, wasn't it?
Yes, it was Leighton, yes. But I mean, as a matter of fact, it was Leighton who did the sacking.
Mm-hmm.
And he, as I say, was the only one that was the whole system who was never knighted. So, I mean, I felt that I gave a wry smile, but that was it. But mind you, he's a great deal to be said for Woodman. But he was utterly lacking in imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Utterly lacking in imagination. And...
Well, he doesn't seem to have been very popular with the other civil servants.
Wasn't he ever the voice of the...
I think it's just a question of his manners.
Oh, I don't think anyone had respect for him. I mean, no, he's a... I always liked Guy. We could call each other Guy and Hugh, but we always have, really. We were in the same year. In point of fact, he bumped me earlier than that, but that's another long story. But he did pass over me for about a few months. He passed the first exam before I did. Because Slater told me that they weren't going to fill up these vacancies for a long time. So I was the customs, so I applied myself to rewriting the customs manual and all that sort of thing. See, they worked very, very hard then. And then suddenly Slater said to me, "You better hurry up and get through your term, because you're going to find Fremont earlier." Well, meanwhile, it was too late. And so he went over me for a few months.
Well, I haven't asked you a lot.